Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I'm going to be with you for about 50 minutes, 55, give or take. I have just an interesting show today. Two very professional actors, been on stage and screen and everything, running around outside in amphitheaters. They do it all. And I'll have them introduce themselves. One, you've noticed, the gentleman with the hat. Yes, he's been on before. He has some function there at Shakespeare and Company, but I'll let him introduce. Sir, would you introduce yourself and the lovely lady?
I'm Alan Burrows. I'm the artistic director. Good to see you, Bill. Always a pleasure to have a chat with you. And I'm joined by...
I'm Samara Hickey, and I am an actor and also married to this Mr. Alan Burrows.
Everybody's got a cross.
Yeah.
That's what my wife says. I don't know how true it is, but well, listen, I want to thank the both of you. And Alan, you've done, not because we're friends or whatever, but you've done a marvelous job reinventing, I think, and reinvigorating Shakespeare and Company. And I mean that sincerely.
Thanks, Bill.
You know, the amphitheater, the beer garden, the whole, I mean, it's just a place people want to be now.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, the Roman Garden Theater that we transformed into a beer garden this summer was a lot of fun. But then I have people who miss it as a theater because we used to do shows in the morning there, and then like 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and then people would have the rest of their day back. So we're not ruling out. It's not that we would discourage people from drinking beer in there if it's still an amphitheater, but we may go back to having it be a theater as well as a beer garden. It will be a beer theater.
So. Oh, well, that you knocked down two birds with one stone.
That's right.
You know, really, that to me is brilliant. I did love it at the theater when you first did. I think I saw Midsummer's Night Dream there.
You saw The Tempest.
That Tempest.
Sam was Ariel in that.
Yeah. But wasn't that? It was a wonderful experience. Excuse me. And now you got some big, I have to congratulate you too, if I may, Pam, Tam, Plays in Progress. What a brilliant idea that was to bring that to Shakespeare and Company. And I want to let people know, because believe it or not, Alan, with all your advertising, with all the stuff we've done on the air, there's still people who think it's only Shakespeare.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what to do now other than, like, you know, just changing the name of the company, which would of course be heresy. You know,
right.
You can't do that, but you know, even if we say Shakespeare and Company or Shakespeare and Company, but yeah, the Plays in Process series, and Tam had a one person show that kind of inaugurated the Plays in Process series called This Is It. And then went on to form a company around it called Metagirl Productions. And so it's really taken off in a number of very interesting ways. So the Plays in Process series, we did Jim Frangione's play, The Shallows, which was a sequel to Flight of the Monarch for last year. And then we did a Ken Ludwig play called Adults at Play that was very funny. And then we did a play that Tina Packer's been working on. So it's a really interesting laboratory at the end of the summer. And several of them have gone on to further productions. And
I'm glad you brought that out. Yes.
You know, Three Tall Persian Women. That we did this year. These were all plays that we could really test them out on an audience. And, you know, we did it the first year kind of as a lark. And now we actually pay some attention to it because it has turned out to be a good avenue for people to further explore the plays in that series and then take it on to a further life. So it's a lot of fun. And it's outside under the Rose Footprint tent. You know, it's interesting as I'm looking at our brochure. It's so strange at this time of year to look at the brochure and just about everything in the brochure is done.
Yeah.
Know, we
Yeah.
have the
What do you
rest
mean
of
by that?
And that's what we want to talk about is Mother Play, this play that Tammas
Ah.
just opened, and this Paula Vogel play that came to my attention just by combing, you know, the usual trade papers and everything, and it was a new play that was done on Broadway last year, and it was
Wow.
nominated by four Tony nominations, and
Wow.
Drama Desk Awards and Outer Critics Circle Awards, and I thought, well, I'll never get the rights to that show. That's going to be a hot property. So I wrote the playwright herself.
Oh, wow.
Is and on Instagram, and I was like, hey, I could go through channels on this, but I would probably be just rebuffed because I'm sure they got bigger plans. And it's kind of like when you buy a house these days, it helps when you write a letter to the owner of the house saying how beautiful their house is,
Yeah.
which is how we got this house, wasn't it? We wrote a letter, and
Yeah.
sometimes it comes down to, oh, well, yeah, that's a personal touch that I can take a shine to. So the playwright wrote, she said, I'll let my agent know that you're interested, so takes the middleman out of it.
Yeah. Well, I also think it's some a word that's very rarely used these days, civility and civil, a way to just network people and show people you're interested in them. I mean, this is truly the me generation. If you don't believe me, just go out and try to drive your car. Better yet, go in a big white parking lot.
Oh my God. I was there the
It
other
was
day.
safer in downtown Baghdad than you there.
What is with that parking lot? You take your life in your hands in that place. Is it because of the whole thing? Maybe because it's slanted, or I don't know. But anyway, what's your
Because
experience been like, Tam, working on this play?
well, Tim, we were talking while you were out doing whatever you were doing. I read, I went online, I re some great reviews, and I mean from people. I mean from people who have seen it. And I often say, I know we have to have theater critics, and you don't have to comment either because you're in the business. But my thing with theater critics is this: what qualifies you? Were you ever in the arts? Did you ever get on stage and deliver a line? See, I can't do that, but I can play the dead body, so don't for keep forgetting. But it would be impertinent for me to criticize those who do. I'm sorry. But hey, listen, Tam, this how what? First of all, five apartments. Your scenery people must have been going crazy.
Are what people? Set people?
People, yeah, set people.
Well, the set people, okay, so we do have a set designer who is a brilliant designer. He actually designed the set for Three Tall Persian Women last year.
Oh, it was marvelous.
And it's a very spare, it's the when you open the play, there's the author's notes, and the first line of her sort of suggestions around how to handle the material is, this is not naturalistic. And she really invites the director and the actors to use their imagination and to make it fun. It's tough material. It's pretty hard hitting. It's about a family. It's about a woman who has struggled through a lot of various setbacks. And so the relationships are fraught, to say the least. But I will say the world that the set designer and director have created is kind of this like snow globe of a world where things move around within it. And it's actually mostly the other two actors that play my daughter and my son who do the moving of the set. So they are constantly shifting furniture. And a lot of people really find it effective. They watch the world with just a few set pieces change in front of their eyes, like moving boxes, moving a couch, moving a chair. We don't take anything off. We sometimes bring stuff on, but it sort of just gets shuffled and shifted again, sort of like this snow globe where it kind of gets thrown up and then it settles, and all of a sudden you're in another apartment, and
Wow.
the woman playing Martha, the daughter, who she essentially is like the narrator of the play, and she's always anchoring the audience in terms of where they are in terms of the
Wow.
year
Cool.
and the apartment, and you can see this family, this matriarch, sort of evolve through these apartments and get better and better apartments. But as she's getting better and better apartments, the relationships, I would say, are getting increasingly challenged.
Like any family.
Like any family. And I think
Yeah.
that's why there is really something for anyone who's a part of a family and who
Yeah.
has a mother, i.e. everyone, are finding themselves transported not just into their own experience, but also a little bit of nostalgia. There's a lot of music. There's like a whole stream of music that comes and goes to anchor the audience in the time period. It starts in
Oh,
1964
wow.
and it spans 40 years. So there are these musical anchors that a friend who came last night was saying, certain songs evoked memories for him from his own life. And
Oh,
so they
sure.
anchor us in the story, but they also bring up all sorts of different things for people who have lived through this time period, and who remember the 60s, and who remember the influence of the 50s. And so I think it's in that way surprising me the degree to which people are really resonating on a personal level with
Yeah.
this story.
I can tell you, so it's very funny. It's very, and
Yeah.
the three actors are just very sharp, and it's very quick-witted and a lot of really great dialogue.
Yeah.
But also it, it's a hard-hitting show, you know what I mean? And so
Well,
people come
it's
out,
family.
yeah,
It's
it's family, right.
I don't care if you grow up. I grew up in a wonderful family, but there were times when, well, we didn't really all love each other, brothers and sisters. But
Yeah.
and those were my that's my era. I was
Yeah.
born in the 40s, kind of grew up in the 50s, and then bam, the 60s, and went, whoa, dude, I war story. I was my father's remote for the TV. Billy, turn that on channel 10. Got it, Dad. Dun, dun, dun.
That's unbelievable because
Yeah.
I, being the youngest, was
Oh, me too.
the antenna because my sister would say, "Okay, you just stand there." So I always watched the TV from the side because I had to hold on to this little Zenith black and white TV antenna, and if I let
Yeah.
go of it, the screen got fuzzy. So I had to stand, and then they'd be like, "Okay, it's a commercial. Go in the kitchen and tell us what time it was." But I
Yeah.
didn't know how to tell time. I was only 14. So and so I went in and I would have to tell them where the big hand was and where the little hand was. And they're like, "Okay, great. Now get back to
Grab the
the
TV.
TV."
Well, my father said we were watching the Al Sullivan show and Elvis Presley came on and he started his gyrations. Now you got to remember, that was probably his first national show. My
Right.
father, Billy, turn that on channel 6. But
Yeah.
Dad, this is Billy. See, my father wasn't a big one for debates. But going back, what a, again, the best of times and the worst of times. I mean, for Vietnam and all that, but damn, one of the things people always want to know when I do shows with actors and how do you, and especially with this one, how do you prepare yourself for this role that is constantly changing, I think. Share that with us, if you would, please.
Constantly changing, and she's literally constantly changing. I haven't actually counted, but I have at least like eight or nine outfits, and they're all
Wow.
quick changes. So I come off stage and I'm being helped by one of our crew in the back who's appointed as my dresser, and we together change clothes right back on stage, change clothes right back on stage. And we all have a number of those, all three of us.
Wow.
So I change and change literally. It depends on the material. I think for this one, the preparation for me is sort of like starting with the fundamentals. I know eventually I'm going to have to know my lines, so I start there. No actor gets away with not knowing their lines. It's just something you have to do, and you have to find a way to do it that is the least tedious. Because it's just you, there's no debating. You need to know your lines. So I sort of start there with the lines and allow the story to kind of get settled into my body in that way and my mind in that way, and all sorts of questions tend to come up from there. And I really think this character has helped me recognize or remember that as an actor, our job is really to get as close to the truth of the story and the truth of each moment as possible. And in order to get to the truth, you really have to refrain from placing any judgments on the character. This character, it would have been really easy to do that with, because on the page, she's a fierce woman, and she's had a lot of influences, both from the cultural and the way she was raised through the 50s. She was born 27, I think. And the expectations from the culture and her family around how a woman is supposed to be, and the availability of opportunities or lack thereof. And, things were very limited back then for women. And she was butting up against that, and unfortunately married a man who didn't treat her well. And so I had to really, I really had to kind of get into why is the behavior. Why is she doing that? Why do I think she might be doing this? Why do I think she might be saying this from a place of non-judgment? Because you have to just represent the truth of this person, how it's written, and not worry about how it's going to be received, and really just focus on the relationships between you and the other actor and the story that's being told and the truth of what's going on. And that's why you rehearse. I mean, that is basically what rehearsal is about. It's like, can we get closer and closer and closer and closer to what we believe this moment to moment is about?
Cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because it's a set of artificial circumstances, and yet what you're trying to do is create moments truthful. So that, I mean, there's an irony to that. You know, I mean, right now we're kind of at a stage, I think, in the country. I can't speak for the world, but you know, with artificial intelligence, the internet, all the technology, where, you know, we're asking ourselves, well, what is the function of theater now? Function of storytelling, live storytelling, live in-person storytelling. Do people have the attention span? You know, I know I don't,
Yo.
because I'm like a Jack Russell Terrier. But you know, I mean, it's like when someone says, "Oh, how long's the play?" "Oh, it's 80 minutes without intermission." "Oh, okay, that's good." Yeah, 80 minutes, no intermission. I can handle that. I can sit in through that, or 90 minutes. Because if you have a play that's 100 minutes without an intermission, that's 1 hour and 40 minutes. Bladders can't do that.
And I told one of your colleagues a rather long play with no intermission. Look at your average age of the people in your audience. They can't go an hour and 20 minutes because they have to go. You know what I'm saying? And the other piece is, years ago I studied adult education. And the father of adult education is a guy by the name of Malcolm Knowles, or so they say. And he had a thing, and I tell people this when they give lectures and stuff. I actually told a priest this not long ago. And so I got to go to a different church now, but that's a whole new thing. But bottom line is, adults, the mind can only absorb what the behind can endure. And if you think
Yeah.
about that, you guys as performers, it's not that people get disinterested, is they get antsy.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just saw this not recently, or recently, I mean, at a play. Just it was little, about an hour and 40 minutes, but it was just a long hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was in a show. I went to a show the other night in Boston at a theater that I won't name. But the first act was an hour. And I thought, oh, this is great. I'm going to be back on the Pike and I can deal with that late night construction. I'll be home by 11. The second act was an hour and 40 minutes long.
That's another thing they're doing. No, really, you're not the only person. The more it used to be, the first act was the longest and the second act was the shortest.
Right.
Now they're playing with that. And I don't think it's healthy. I you know, I it is what it is, I guess. No one ever called and said, "Hey, Bill, what do you think about this?"
But the mother play is an hour and 35 minutes. And an hour and 35 minutes allows you to tell what is kind of an epic story for this family and the whole arc. And then you walk out of there and you feel different about life and, you know, your family and yourself. And that's, you know, and, you know, I stay in the lobby. I hang out in the lobby and I don't want to, like, you know, rush up to people and ask them what they think because they need a minute to settle. But I lean on the bar and I face away from where they're coming out. So they see me, and if they, you know, if they want to say something, they will. But more often than not, people come out and they're like, wow.
Yeah.
What just happened?
Well, that's coming over on the internet too.
Yeah.
You know, because I troll the internet looking for what people have to say. The other piece is, you know, in today's world, families are not what they were when I was growing up.
Right.
Probably when you were growing up. So for you to put yourself, for people to watch it, they're going to walk out, and I think they're going to relate to it. I want to go back to the set for a minute because you'll soon understand that this isn't all functioning in the way it should. Not my hair, beneath it. The Persian women, they did a lot of the moving of stuff in and out of that set too. So that's kind of this guy's genre, this person's genre. But it made a huge difference.
It's interesting. There were a lot of boxes in that play, and there's a lot of boxes in our play. And that's not an Omid thing. That's the name of the designer, Omid. That's actually built into our script. But it's interesting to see that parallel, that that similarity, and like you say, the moving of furniture. And that may also come from, I'm not sure if the writer was thinking about this. I'm not sure if Paula Vogel was thinking about it. Paula Vogel is celebrated enough that, you know, the play premiered on Broadway. So budget for that. And I don't know I'm guessing that the actors on Broadway didn't move the furniture themselves. I'm guessing that. Probably. I don't know if we can say that with absolute certainty, but
the Broadway production.
So they have they have the budget for that. And maybe I'm just curious if maybe the playwright for Three Tall Persian Women, for example, they write nowadays recognizing that budgets are much more constrained and limited, and they want to have the possibility of it having a larger life in theaters that maybe don't have Broadway budgets. So we kind of think of that when we're, you know, when folks are making plays, or when you're looking at plays, certainly as a producer, how can I do this on a shoestring budget? And how might I do that? But for this play, you know, it was written in such a way that it very easily could be the actors. And it just so happened that we did it out of necessity. And I think it functions, it really serves the play.
You bring up a good point though, Bill, you know, the function of a set, you know, a physical set or the lack thereof. You know, oftentimes there's just a suggestion of a set, you know, like with Flight of the Monarch we did last year.
Yeah.
Just a chair and a bed.
Yeah.
And you had to imagine the rest of that hospital room. But we did a piano lesson here earlier in the summer. Some of your folks may have seen it. And
I did.
I transferred it out from Boston. It was a huge set in Boston, like three times that big, the house. And I was like, well, how are you going to pack that? How are you going to make that stairwell, which was like 27 steps in Boston? And they turned it into six steps here. And like, there's a lot that happens in piano lesson that happens upstairs. And I was worried about it. I was like, I kept asking the designer. He's like, we're good. We'll do it. And I'm like, yeah, easy for you to say, because if it doesn't work, then it doesn't fall on you. It falls on me. But they made it work. And the beauty of it is the actors got there and they were like, this feels much more like the house
Oh,
that would
good.
be in the story.
Sure.
Because for us and that space and the function of theater, it's all about what is the visceral reaction that people are having to this live performance. When people are having these towering emotions and they're only 2, 3 feet from
Get
you.
away.
So bouncing off your bones. And that's the only hedge really that I have against live streaming, right? Like, hey, I consume a lot of live streaming content. It's how I go to sleep at night. So, I like a good Irish drama or Australian or British drama. But how do you get people out and into the theater now and have them in,
Especially now,
especially
people are
now, and into a
still
closed
goofy
space?
about, people are still kind of goofy about COVID. The powers to be don't help because A is saying don't, and B is saying do, and C is saying I don't care what you do. I mean, you walk around scratching your head, and in my case, that's dangerous because I could get a, there's nothing there. I'm inside or out. But the I really think I learned quickly. I can think of the play, but I can't think of the name of it. But the set is what, that's what first turned me on, and was this, it was, they just, it was a big box, and they just kept turning the box, and right, all of a sudden there's a new set. And then the second one was Mark Saint Germain's Freud's Last Session. I thought I was in Freud's office. And there are people who say I should have been in Freud's office, but we won't talk about them. You're making excellent points about learning the lines, and that is always a question I get. How come you're not asking the how they learn their lines? How do you learn your lines so I don't get emails
Well,
afterwards?
it's a common question. We had a talk back last night, and a gentleman asked the same thing. It's often a question that people get, and I think everyone has their own method, and everyone has to come up with, like I said before, because it's an inevitable truth that you have to learn them. So everyone finds their own way. And for me, the biggest contributor, I think, is time. So if I know I'm going to be doing a project, I start early and I just sort of work backwards, so that I can do it in a way where it doesn't feel stressful. Because once you get into rehearsal, and not every actor, and this is just the way I work, some actors find it easier to learn the lines while they're subsequently rehearsing, because then it's,
It's too late.
you get that, you can sort of connect them to where you are physically and emotionally. But for me, I really need that first layer of just by rote. So that when I get into rehearsal, then I can focus on the relationships with the people, and I can really listen and rehearse. We rehearse for such a short period of time on these contracts, right? We're rehearsing for 3 weeks, and then we go into tech, and that's like barely time to read a play, in my opinion. So you kind of have to, you have to do what serves you. And I feel for me, it's the least stressful if I can be as comfortable with the material before we start working on it as possible. And that's just starting in advance.
Tam is a real pro though,
But
because she it you know it it you bring a lot of discipline to your line learning. Me, I always think
tell that. I can really
I'll get
tell.
to that. I'll get to that. I'm sure I'll learn them. And then I panic. And then I think I'm never going to learn these lines. It's going to be me out there. I'm going to have a full Western omelet on my face. And this is going to be awful. And this probably should be the last show I ever do. And why haven't I, kind of gotten more control about my life? And gosh, I am such a useless waste of space. And if only I could learn these lines. And then I think, oh, I got them. And then I wake up in the morning and they're all gone. And then I'm like, well, this is great because clearly I, whatever I've done, I've drunk too much beer in my life, and it's caused me not to be able to learn lines. And and then all of a sudden, one day you wake up and you're like, what was I worried about? Like, all I had to do was repeat. All I had to do was take the time, like you do in
It's
life,
taking the time.
and just repeat, and don't kid yourself about your ability to learn lines. It is the most frequently asked question.
And I'm
It is.
not, well, because the average Joe and Mary, they're friends of mine, Joe and Mary Sixpack, they look at you and they say, how can they do that? I can't remember from 1 minute to the next. I have, look at all the paper I have just for this interview. I mean,
Don't memorize in life anymore. It's not like we go to school and memorize poems like once upon a
right.
time. I will say too that this I got from both Shakespeare and Company and Alan is one of the ways, the best ways for me to learn is once I get to a certain place with it is just to hike, and I have them on my phone, and I do it that way, and I feel like if I'm moving my body while I'm learning my lines, there's a belief that they get sort of embodied, they get sort of planted
Part of you, yeah, part of you,
deeply when you're sort of breathing and moving. And so yeah, that's another little trick for the trade.
Problem is for me, for that to work, I have to walk all the way to Vermont.
Yeah, no, backwards.
I'll be out. It might take me all night, and then I'll come back and I will have learned one line, and I'll be like, wow, this is okay. I've got 400 lines. I've learned one, and we open in 2 weeks.
I'm on my way.
And I'm
That's
on
what
my
you say.
way.
I'm on
Yeah,
my
look at
way.
me. Woo! Look at me
We're gonna
now.
take a break. I am here with two wonderful people, and we're talking about the play Mother. And it's now it's been extended. It's a great play. The actress is right there. I forgot. I should have. I got it right here. When's it extended? It was the 5th of October, right?
Yeah, it runs through the 5th of October,
That I did
and
my
it
homework.
runs on weekends, and
Yeah.
it's Thursday through Sunday.
Okay.
And let's see, like, so what's the date
So
today?
today's Friday.
Today's
Friday
Friday
the
the 19th. We
19th.
have two on Saturday, one tonight, two Saturday, one Sunday, and then that repeats for the next 2 weeks. Thursday through Sunday, double show day on two on Saturday.
Right. 2 and 7. So they do the Saturday, then they gotta turn around and do it again right away.
Yeah.
So 5 a week. But
Take a break and then we'll come back and nail the whole schedule down for you so you can write it down. We're going to give you the box office number, Alan's personal cell phone number, and his email address so you can go to him. This is
Okay.
WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301, and we are now broadcasting on channel 88.1 in all of southern or most of southern Berkshire. So we'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Greetings, this is John Pollock, host of The Jazz Train, which comes your way every Saturday night from 10 to 11:30. The Jazz Train generally features music recorded on a particular calendar date in years past and provides relevant commentary and discographical details. So why not join me for a ride on the Jazz Train for a weekly musical adventure, coming to you on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
We are back. The good-looking people there, they're from Shakespeare and Company. I'm going to have them introduce themselves again, only because I forgot their names. No, only kidding. Only because I want you to get to put a name with a face. And we'll start with the good-looking lady.
I'm Tamara Hickey, and I'm an actor here at Shakespeare and Company. And this is...
I'm Tamara Hickey's husband, and my name is Alan Burroughs, and I'm the artistic director at Shakespeare and Company.
And they have a beautiful daughter who won a big award in Lenox, and I thought she was coming on today, but she had to go to school.
I know. Yeah, I'll tell you, if she'd known that it might be a chance, she would have somehow mysteriously gotten a sword.
We're going to make that happen. We are going to make that happen. The three. I mean that. Tam, is she's the star of the play Mother. It's a play in about five evictions, and it's a family, and it has all the dynamics in the good, the bad, and the ugly of family. Is that fair to say, Tam?
I would say that's fair to say. Yeah. Yeah.
Because we all grew up in families. I grew up in families, and there was the wonderful times, the great times, and then there were the dad's not in a good mood. How'd that happen? Billy!
Yeah, a number of times I heard, just wait till your father gets home.
Yeah, oh.
You're like, well, I won't be here. I know I'm only three, but I won't be here.
Yeah, but just, I don't want you to give anything away, but one of the things when I was doing my research, went through hardships, including cockroach infestation and painful conflicts. Well, that's a family's life. Mm-hmm. That's why I want people to see this. Your family's not unique. And I will say this from my background. Families will have ups and downs, but never turn your back on your family. Me saintly Irish mother, God rest her soul, had a saying, nothing comes above or before family. Mm. And I know, and I'm sure you guys know, I don't talk to my father. Well, you better, because he's 75. He's not going to be here another 30 years when you can make up. So things like that. And Tam, you did such a great job in the first half. Being a morning show, you got some people in and out. Just quickly, I have to tell you this before I forget. I forgot the last half hour, but by now you know what you're dealing with. One of the guys that I interview, and I'm sure you know him, but I'll let him tell. He records his lines, and then he plays them at night when he's sleeping.
Oh, interesting. That?
Yeah, that I've heard that works. I play them during the day when I'm sleeping, and it doesn't work.
That's what the staff says, pretty much. He's out there in the amphitheater, out like a light.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I thought that was, but Tam, how do you learn yours? The first half.
I do record as well. There's an app actually called Line Learner where you can record the scenes and you record everyone's lines. You record the whole thing as it appears on the page. And when you play it back, you have the option to play just their line and then it leaves a blank for yours. Or you can play theirs and yours and you can say it with yourself. Or you can play just your, there's all sorts of ways that you can manipulate the app to have it play for you. So I do record it, but I tend to be awake when I listen because I haven't yet tried the the sleeping subconscious lucid line learning method, but if there was an easier way, I'm open to
Oh my God. If there was a way to have a microchip implanted in my brain, I could, you know,
Yeah, me too.
The time saving would be astronomical. I mean, really, if because there's some, you know, the weeks that you have to devote to it. And you know, budgetary constraints being what they are, we just rehearse these plays for less time than we used to be able to. I think they get there, but it's always a bit of a nail biter because, you know, you've got to get there by dress rehearsal, which is before the public shows up, but the public shows up the next day and you got to be ready. And, you know, we used to, the Shakespeare plays, gosh, we used to rehearse them for 6 weeks and then it went to 5 weeks. Now we rehearse them for 4.5 weeks. And there are a lot of moving parts. And these non-Shakespeare's, sometimes you only get 2 weeks.
Yeah, we rehearsed this for 3 weeks and then we had tech and dress rehearsal. So yeah, it feels quick. But yeah, just to go back to what you were saying about Mother Play, the story, it's such a specific story to the playwright. There's a lot of her own biography in it. And she has memorialized her brother, Carl, who has appeared in two other plays that I know of, maybe even more. For which she won the Pulitzer, How I Learned to Drive. And he's in this play as well. And it's an incredibly specific story to her. And yet it is incredibly universally relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, again, without violating too much, how much of out of the play did you compare, like, oh, we had that problem or we did this or that within my family? My family was 5 o'clock. Everybody's at the kitchen table. That's it. No excuses. It worked till my sister got boyfriends. My father would always say, what idiot would be calling at 5 o'clock supper time?
I think, you know, this play starts in 1964. It's not that I necessarily resonate to the time period, but what I do resonate to is how my character, the mother, is, you know, we learn enough about her parents and we're reminded enough of what's going on at the cultural level to recognize that this woman has been influenced by all of these outside factors. And it's one of the things I appreciate the most about the play is that she brings in just enough of the cultural references, mostly through music, through naming the year. And so you say 1967, people are going to kind of, like, people who lived that time are going to, okay, I can name five things I know was going on nationally in 1967. These are big years politically, right?
Yeah.
And so there's enough information about the mother's parents to recognize that we don't grow up as individuals. We grow up as an extension of our forebears, right? And so what it's got me thinking a lot about in terms of comparison is recognizing the ways in which I'm reminded of these patterns or these family habits that have deeply ingrained because they've been going on for generations and generations and generations. And we see that a lot in this play. And in order to interrupt those patterns, it takes either a crisis or someone in the family breaking out. And the 60s was a time collectively where the youth, you know, it was the youth explosion and the Beatles. So that was happening on a national level where the youth were saying, no, we're not gonna do with these 5 o'clock at the dinner table rules. We're gonna go crazy. We're gonna let loose. We're gonna be free. We're gonna have love. We're gonna, you know. So I think that's a really great container within which to recognize, oh, that's how I see myself in it. I can see that my own, there's these patterns that go way back that keep repeating that aren't necessarily personal to me, yet I experience it or I live it out.
And as actors, both of you, through your various roles, how much of it resonated with your upbringing, your family, your current situation? You know, I know if I was just talking about your play now, I'm thinking about the kitchen table and shoveling and the garbage cans I forgot to bring back. My father, just to let you know, they were at the top of the driveway. They were metal then. And he decided, because I left them there, that he would kick them all the way back down the driveway so that they went bam, bam, just to remind me.
Well, there's a metal garbage can in our play. You'll be happy to know.
Oh, cool. Yeah. See, now we're right back at home. Great set designer. He really is. Alan, you got what I consider a wonderful event for Berkshire County. We just had one at the Colonial. But you're celebrating Jewish plays. And up there, they celebrated Jewish playwrights. And I can't thank you enough and Shakespeare and Company for doing this. I've been kind of involved with the one at the Colonial for the last couple of years. And I find the plays riveting and educational.
Yeah. This was an idea that kind of came up organically. And, you know, my board introduced it to me and they were like, you know, here's an idea. What do you think? And I thought this is great because, you know, we're celebrating the plays, the playwrights, the writers, the culture, and you put them all together in one weekend. Then it allows you to take a 30,000 foot view on kind of what theater is about. You know, there are various cultures that kind of write in a certain avenue, a certain way. And, you know, we've celebrated other cultures as well. And in our writing, and when we put on, you know, we were the first company to bring August Wilson to Berkshire County, and with Fences, and then now with Piano Lesson. And I mean, I don't know how many Iranian plays have been done in Berkshire County before we did Three Tall Persian Women. So actually, you know, we're coming back by celebrating Jewish plays and playwrights. We're coming back to a long tradition of storytelling. Some of them are more nuanced in how we're putting forward these stories. Like Arthur Miller, you think of as a classic American playwright. You know, he's not necessarily there are themes that, you know, resonate for the Jewish demographic in them, but he was primarily an iconic kind of classic American playwright. And in that way, is that the phone ringing? And so that's how we start. We kind of start with the classic and with The Price, which some people would argue is his best play. And, you know, when, you know, Spare sets, James Warwick, who's directed a bunch of stuff for us, will direct. I'll actually talk my way into being in it because it's, I'll play the brother, the jerk brother. And, and then we move on to a new play.
Can I understudy that?
You can.
The jerk brother. Ask my brother. Well, you can. He's passed. But no.
And then played by Karen Hartman called Roz and Ray, which is, you know, heavy on the family themes and this medical themed play. And that's what we can, you know, also you put all these plays together and without even thinking about it, a certain theme will jump out at you. And in this series, it's definitely family. It's everyone can relate to that. It wasn't intended like, oh, let's do four plays about family. We just choose the plays on their own merit. And then it comes up in that way. And then another play that's been touring the country, was done in New York, it was done out in Los Angeles, which is Here There Are Blueberries by Moises Kaufman, which is kind of a multimedia one about that takes, it's an exploration of these photographs that were found from a concentration camp, but the photographs aren't of the the people who were interned in the concentration camp. It's of all the people who ran the concentration camp, and
Oh,
it
wow.
flips the story on its ear, and it's a fascinating story, and there's kind of a there's a discovery in it, and there's a surprise in it, and that will be. I should tell you the nights of all these. The Price by Arthur Miller will be on Friday, October 10th at 7 p.m. And then Here There Are Blueberries will be Saturday. Sorry. And then Roz and Ray by Karen Hartman. That's going to be with John Douglas Thompson, who's a longtime company favorite. And that will be Saturday afternoon at 2 on the 11th. And then Saturday night is Here There Are Blueberries. And then we finish off the weekend with The Sisters Rosenzweig by Wendy Wasserstein, which was, of course, done on Broadway years ago. Another
Yeah.
kind of classic, but a later classic. And then if people buy tickets to, I think, at least three of the other ones, they get a pass to get into this devised piece, this work in progress called The Weight of Ink, which is an adaptation of a novel by Rachel Kadish that Tam is actually in. Do you want to talk about The Weight of Ink a little?
Yeah, I'll just say, Alan was talking about how we, Kate Kohler Amory, who also directed, Comedy of Errors last summer, 2 summers ago.
Two
Yes.
summers
Two
ago.
summers ago at Shakespeare and Company. She and I devised the solo piece, This Is It, that I performed here at the, first inaugural Plays in Process. We went on to do it in New York, do it in Boston. And we're in the process of just beginning the stage of adapting in this novel by Rachel Kadish to the stage. And so we're just sort of going to give people an insight into that, show a little bit of material that we have. And Rachel Kadish has agreed to come out and give a conversation about,
Whoa.
yeah. And actually, Rachel Kadish was at Mother Play last night. So she's also
Oh,
very, she's, being exposed to theater in a way that she hasn't as a novel writer before. So we're sort of
wow. Well, sure.
these two forms of writing and trying to figure out how we translate a novel to the stage in this
How
process.
many pages is the novel?
The novel's 555 pages.
555 pages.
And we
So it's might be a one act.
Yeah. All I will tell you is that I love when people do, whether it's a movie or a play, bring a good book to life. And through, well, Shakespeare, but there's been so many good books that I've read, and I say to myself, why doesn't somebody produce this? Because what a story.
It's often a big leap, because if you're a big part of the population that's really attached to the book, then they'll be like, oh, that movie just didn't do the book justice.
Yeah, I know. I've seen.
Yeah, and oftentimes it doesn't. You have to kind of start fresh, and it's certainly it's different watching it on film than watching a novel that's been adapted for the stage,
Yeah.
which is an easier, I think, not as big a jump. Although
Yeah.
this play will be a big jump from the
It would, yeah, it
novel.
would be a multiple year project, though this is the very beginning stages of that conversation with Rachel.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, I am a big supporter of art along the lines. I grew up in a very mixed middle to middle class, lower middle class, up middle class, if there, whatever that is.
No middle.
Well, my father was a fireman and my mother was a nurse, so blue collar. But we lived next door to Sam Lenhof, and he and my father were great buddies. And in the summertime, they'd sit on the front porch, both of them smoke unfiltered cigarettes, and Sam would drink Manischewitz and my father drink Canadian Club. But I learned so much from both of them and their friendship that I like to support, especially now when people have different views, and I'm sure I'll hear about it. But I support this because I think there's a lot of learning that comes. I know the Polish princess and I, and Tam, that's my wife. The yeah. Polish princess and I, we walked away from the one. We could only go one night because we had a babysit for the grandchildren. We walked away saying, "Oh my God, it was such a powerful." It was just a reading. But it was so powerful.
Right.
The play itself had such, you know, depth to it that we talked about it for 2 or 3 days.
When you put the words out there, and very nearly just the words, like there may be a little bit of a set for these. People might be moving around a little bit. But when you put the focus on the words, it comes back to the basics of writing, and good writing really stands out, and a lot of people overlook that. I know that when I'm choosing a play, if I read 20 pages of a play and it hasn't hooked me, move on. I don't sit down and read a whole play and then decide whether it's a good play, because it's the same with, you know, when you're asking for people's attention, they come, they rent a seat.
Yeah.
And then, okay, show me.
Yeah.
And there's like, you know, that's the thing about this business. And with Robert Redford passing away just recently, he and I really grew up watching his films, like right when they came out. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, that was, I don't know how many times I saw that film. The Sting. I've been watching a lot of interviews with him, posthumously. He talks about what a tough business it is, but no one makes you be an actor, right?
No.
Like an actor is something that you choose to do. And they talk about it as being a tough business. And there's nothing harder on it because you have to expose so much of yourself, not literally, but, you really got to, as Tam was saying, you got to go for those moments of truth that, set you apart. And it is kind of a meritocracy, right? Like if you're not good and you have no business being up there on that stage, then I'm sorry, you got to get off the stage.
Yeah, and I, it's a tough row to hoe.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said this a million times on air and off air. Actors are the most resilient people I know. Audition. Excuse me. And they give it 150% and the phone never rings.
Yeah.
And then you have the kiddos to say, "I'm going to New York and be a star," and I know a lot of people, a lot of kids that have left. They're still in New York. They're working on when they can work, and then when they're not, they're working at Starbucks or some. But
yeah,
I don't think anybody's an overnight success in this business. Maybe they are. I don't know of any.
I usually audition about 300 people a year for our season, for maybe 9 slots. And people bring so much talent into the room and they bring so much hope into the room. You're like, you got to kind of make space for that, and hold that energy. Yeah. You want to be there for them because they put a lot of time and energy into something. But 9 times out of 10, they're definitely qualified to do a role or something, but it's really about how things match up and how the story needs to be told. And it's hard because actors are like, "Oh, I didn't get that. I must have been really terrible." And it's really rarely that just blew the audition. Like if someone forgets their lines in an audition, it can be devastating for them. And you're like, "Don't worry about it. Pretty much the moment within the first minute of someone auditioning, if they're going to be a fit or not."
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, I wish you all this is a I know it's an old theater thing, break a leg. But you know, as a person who has broken a leg, you don't want to go. But thank you so much for being on. And folks, you got no, this is not procrastination time. Pick up the phone, call the box office, lock yourself in a seat for Mother. I'm telling you, if you've grown up in a family, I promise you'll get something out of it.
Yeah, the phone, the box office number is 413-637-3353. You can also go online at shakespeare.org, shakespeare.org. It's a great website, easy to buy tickets, and then you can come see the show until October 5th, and don't
Yeah,
wait.
and don't wait. You know, I always have people say to me, "Oh, you know, Bill, I watched that, but I the kids got mad." This one, and listen, I don't want you to take this as anything personal. I will be charging you for the black ink that I'm a not-for-profit business here. And have your designers put the stuff in color next time, not the whole background in black. I
The
do want to.
whole ink cartridge. I do want to
I
remind,
know.
I do want to remind folks that there's a 40%
Yes.
Berkshire resident discount that it's really good to take advantage of.
Before we go, I have two quick announcements. And if I don't read them, well, it won't be pretty for me. One, Art for Alzheimer's. It's going to be at Kimball Farm. It's a fundraiser to help with Alzheimer's research and family support. Kimball Farms, 235 Walker Street in Lenox, right across the street from you know who, Alan Barrows. And while you're there, seriously, while you're there, swing into the Shakespeare and Company grounds. They're absolutely spectacular. The reception will be reception September the 27th, 3 to 5 p.m. Art on display September 27th to October 4th. Artists include Stephanie Anderson, Diane Feiertel, Ann Jinsinger, Dan Mead, Sally Eagle, and Peggy Braun. All the proceeds will go to help fight Alzheimer's. And we've had it in our family, and I'll tell you, it is something to work your way through. Also coming up, excuse me, Veterans Appreciation, Pittsfield Country Club, Sunday, September the 28th, 11:30 a.m. is lunch. I'll be there. I don't miss a free lunch. Are you kidding me? I'm retired. Now there's golf. 9 holes at 9 a.m., 18 holes at 12:30. Please, please, please call Tom Mooney at 414-807-6687 and let him know that you will be coming in and all of that. Also, I do want to thank both of you guys for coming. With this signing off, we did lose Robert. He was a great actor, but he's also a great person. And I think in today's day and age, let's celebrate the great people and not the, well, we'll leave it at that. Celebrate the great people. God bless. And remember, lift somebody's burden today. Don't be their burden. We're all in this together. We need each other. Take care of it. Guys, next time we got the really important star of that family coming on.
Thanks. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Great to see
Bye-bye.
you.
Cam, I look forward to seeing that play.
Great.
Be well. Thanks, everybody. And folks, be kind to somebody today. It costs nothing. Bye-bye.